Today on Movie Rollers, we have a Jesse Eisenberg fest with End of the Tour and American Ultra. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Esty as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. You love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Still enjoying the heat wave in San Diego.
Yeah, we are lucky, actually, in our house to have AC.
Yes.
Because not all California houses have AC. Yes,
mine does not.
Feel that hot.
It does, trust me. Oh. And the roof gets really hot. So I haven't slept in my own bedroom in a month.
Here we go with...
Here we go.
Yes,
bedroom habits. Yeah, I haven't slept in my own bedroom in a month.
So where are you sleeping?
Downstairs.
Can you get AC?
Yeah, of course I can get AC.
You don't need it.
I don't need it. It gets
2 weeks a year.
Unbearably hot, exactly. Yeah. Maybe like 10 days. Only this year it's been longer.
Yes.
Damn global warming.
Yeah. What we do need in these houses...
Which doesn't exist.
What always surprised me when we moved to California was the fact that we needed heating in our house. Because it's a big lie, right? You see California, blue skies, sunshine, people running around.
It's cold.
People running around the streets in bikinis. You're like, yeah, this is California. Right. We got here in November and we were freezing. We were like, I can't believe it's... And the house here...
It gets in the low 40s.
The problem is the house isn't designed to keep any heat.
But, you know, to the people...
We're like, wine,
when it's 70
and sunny most of the year round.
Anyhow, enough about the weather. We talk about the weather way too much.
Yeah.
So we have two films. Well, before we get into our reviews...
Our new segment.
Yes, There's Nothing to Watch on Netflix.
To which we say...
Humbug.
So? Yeah,
so this whole segment is inspired by many people approaching us and saying, I've got Netflix, but it sucks and I never want to watch anything. So we thought we would just try and give a couple recommendations each week. And let's start with Yazdi.
So my recommendation... for a movie which is streaming live right now on Netflix is the movie The Skeleton Twins. And it stars Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig as two siblings who have kind of drifted apart and come together at a particular time in each of their lives. This is a small little independent movie, but it really packs a bite. I think in our previous episode we talked about How We Are Your Friends is completely lacking in bite. This movie has bite all around it. And for anybody who doubts Kristen Wiig's commitment to doing offbeat, off-kilter, edgy, brave stuff. I mean, I haven't yet seen Diary of a Teenage Girl, but, just see Kristen Wiig here. I mean, she really jumps off the cliff with this one. And Bill Hader matches her, you know, beat for beat. They play completely credible, you know, siblings who kind of, they're meant to be twins, as the title of the movie suggests, but they kind of resonate at the same frequency and yet annoy each other. And it's, you know, very few movies are about brothers and sisters, and this movie does a really good job. Definitely recommend it. And Bill Hader, who we saw recently in Trainwreck, so different.
He's
so versatile. He plays a completely different character here. Definitely worth a watch.
And the name of the movie again?
The Skeleton Twins.
Skeleton Twins. Okay, Rashmi?
Okay, so mine is one called The Wrecking Crew. It was out, I think, earlier this year. It's a documentary. I would say if you like music from the 60s and 70s, then you will love this. This is about a band of musicians that were basically part of every single record that was produced in this era. They were session musicians, and the soundtrack is phenomenal. The people are really interesting. This is a great documentary, and it will just leave you with such a happy feeling. But it's a really important story about a whole unseen group of geniuses. And they were actually featured very heavily in the film we mentioned during our last podcast, Love and Mercy, the movie about Brian Wilson. They actually made reference to The Wrecking Crew, because Brian Wilson famously used the entire Wrecking Crew and not the rest of the Beach Boys in one of their entire albums that was one of their best-selling albums ever. So every single album or song or soundtrack that was made in the 60s and 70s used this group of people, and they were never mentioned.
Unsung.
Unsung heroes, yeah.
And I was going to go ahead and recommend Nightcrawler, but in browsing my Netflix queue, I noticed that the Jennifer Aniston movie, Cake, which she wasn't nominated but was very close, or a lot of buzz about her being nominated, is in our Netflix queue. So, Yazdi, have you seen Cake?
I have not.
It was a movie that did not do well commercially. I think it only opened... had very limited openings here. But again, to say that there's nothing in your Netflix... No, there's no choice on Netflix for a movie like that that has had a lot of, I think, buzz and critical press. Go put it in your Netflix queue today.
Yeah, and Jennifer Aniston probably has the worst taste in movies. She always does horrible, you know, she needs a better manager. But every once in a while, she does something really offbeat. You know, she did, she was in Office Space, and she was so good in The Good Girl. And apparently in Cake, she again plays
Derailed.
She was good in Derailed, yes. But she plays a character who is very societal, who really, you know, is losing it and cannot deal with reality. And it's supposed to be a very grim portrayal. So we need to commend actors when they go off the beaten track.
Yeah.
And reward them. As much as we want to see them do Horrible Bosses, we should also be happy to see them do Cake.
Yeah. Agree.
Sorry, this was your section.
That's okay. All right, so Skeleton Twins, The Wrecking Crew, and Cake, sponsored by...
the good people.
Not yet.
No, actually, I went through a phase where I didn't like Netflix very much, but they're very much back in my good books, some of the television content they're putting in. And, you know, there was a time that I felt the online streaming wasn't perhaps the best deal. There was so much that you couldn't get on DVD, but they've made that transition brilliantly.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Okay, we have movie reviews to do. So we have The End of the Tour and American Ultra, both of which have Jesse Eisenberg in them as in a lead role. Where should we start?
The End of the Tour.
Okay, take it away.
Okay, so this is the story of the five-day interview between Rolling Stone reporter David Lipsky, played by Jesse Eisenberg, and acclaimed novelist David Foster Wallace. And this actually took place right after the 1996 publication of Wallace's groundbreaking epic novel, Infinite Jest. So this is directed by James Ponsoldt, and it's written by Donald Margulies and David Lipsky, who actually wrote the book. And it stars Jason Segel, Jesse Eisenberg, Anna Chlumsky, and a few others in supporting cast, but it's really carried by Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Segel. So, Joe, what did you think of this one? You start us off today.
So, I mean, this movie has done very, very well critically. I didn't know much about it going in, and I think that in this case was a little bit harmful. I had a bit of a hard time bonding with the material. I didn't like the lead character too much, the Jason Segel character, although I did admire what he was doing as an actor. So... above average. I mean, this was a well-crafted movie, but there was nothing special here for me.
I like this movie a lot. And the reason why I like this movie a lot is because there's nothing quite like it right now. And I'm just going to come out and say it. I think on the face of it, the entirety of the movie is about two people talking. Pretty much the whole movie. And yet, it kind of adds up and it has a lot to say. And the movie is really unabashedly literate. It's very, very, it has a lot of things to state about ethics and about selling out versus embracing fame. And it has a lot of things to say about if fame comes at your doorstep, how do you deal with it? And ultimately, it's about loneliness and it's about people trying to find a good way to connect with other human beings. So it kind of deals with all these big themes while being very committedly literate. So I liked it. It's not for everyone, but I really liked it.
So I think I'm exactly halfway between the two of you. Jason Segel really impressed me. I think this is a real slow burner. because it's literally carried by these two actors, and they do a very good job. I think, like you, Yazdi, I think they managed to capture the intricacies of what we think of ourselves and how we judge ourselves against others so perfectly, and what success means and how it changes people's perceptions of us and ourselves. I can't say I really enjoyed it or I was entertained by it, but I admired it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that. I mean, I think, yeah, my major problem with the movie was that it was far too talky.
It is a very talky movie. And, it is entirely talk, yes.
It makes it a very, you know, cerebral movie. And a lot of it depends on you accepting the Jason Segel character as a living, breathing person, as opposed to my reception of him, which was almost the author. I could feel the script writer talking, right? It was, I never felt convinced that this was somebody real.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't blame Jason Segel for that, but this character had such a unique voice and such a way of looking at the world. But it was just one of those things where Rashmi just showed me a picture of the real David Foster Wallace.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I couldn't quite buy into the character, and so ultimately I never bonded with the movie. It kept me like a 6 feet distance away from where I should have been, and instead of going through the motions, it was just one of those kind of the cat's doing something.
The kitten is basically nipping at Yazdi's toes.
All right. Anyway, so therein lies my problem.
I agree. I agree with Joe. I think I literally pulled up a picture because I didn't know what David Foster Wallace looked like. I think Jason Segel physically captured him really well. I agree with Joe. I never really liked the main character, and so I didn't necessarily care for him.
So for me, I did not have that. I mean, he completely transcended, you know. I mean, we know Jason Segel from so many movies, and we know him from
How I Met Your Mother,
and so forth. But I think 5 minutes into the movie, I forgot that was Jason Segel. And I think I agree that it's not a very likable character, but it's a very human character. It's a character of contradictions, of somebody who is very irrationally jealous, you know, for somebody who is, you know, admittedly one of the smartest, you know, writers of his time. You know, he's kind of really prone to little fits of anger and little fits of jealousy and what have you. But that to me only made him more human to me. And again, this is based on a real life encounter, right? So this is based on somebody who wrote a book based on the time he interviewed David Foster Wallace. And I think the movie does not, I like the fact that it states what happened to David Foster Wallace right at the outset. So it doesn't kind of build this false suspense in terms of what happened to him. But I think I love books and I love,
have you read Infinite Jest?
I have. Oh, it was not easy. It was not easy. It's a brilliant book, but you're almost overwhelmed by the brilliance. It's a book which, and I'm not kidding, on every other page it has about 15 footnotes. And you don't usually have footnotes, you know, in novels.
Right. It
has footnotes on every other page. So this is a guy saying, look, Ma, no hands. I mean, he's a very, very smart guy who's just throwing things off. But I just liked the fact that he represented this. He was able to depict this character who is so conflicted. You know, he is unable to find himself. He's unable to find his place in the world. And he has all this fame and love and critical success. And yet he's unable seemingly to connect with him. And there's a scene at the very end where, you know, Jesse Eisenberg's character leaves him, you know, because he's done with the interview. They've kind of had their arguments, discussions, whatever. And when he kind of drives away, I actually felt sad
for the character that David Foster Wallace,
because he was so craving genuine human interaction, even if he was arguing with someone. So that to me is success in showing this character as a very human person who is just craving, like all of us, craving human interaction. I don't know.
Yeah. No, there were some moments of brilliance in the movie that, you know, in particular, I recall a scene in a car mm-hmm. where the two of them, you know, Jesse Eisenberg essentially, you know, makes some declarations about his perceptions of the David Foster Wallace character, and that was very well done. But again, I found myself in admiration rather than you know, in the movie. So
yeah, I think Jesse Eisenberg did a really good job as well. I mean, Jesse Eisenberg, the problem I have with him is he's always Jesse Eisenberg. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's just he's always acting or he's never acting. But I think he did a really good job of portraying, you know, envy is a really difficult emotion mm-hmm. to play. Jealousy is easy because you can be make big gestures overt, about it, right? But envy and admiration are kind of one and the same in some ways. And it's really difficult to play that. And he played this superbly.
Yeah, he did. And I think you can almost sense the fact that, you know, he himself is a writer who has written a novel which nobody has read. And he's been assigned, you know, by the New York Times where he works, to go and do this feature on this very celebrated author. And so he is struggling with, he's envious on the one hand, he's envious of his fame, but at the same time, he is deeply, deeply enthralled by this person's intelligence. So I agree, it's a very cerebral film, but I think it's quite something. The very fact that this is playing in the multiplexes and people are watching it, to me, gives me hope. That sounds like a good summing up.
It does. Anything? And what's your score, Yazdi?
I would give it an 8 out of 10, just because there is nothing quite like it. And if you love books, if you love movies, and this too can be movie, this too can be a movie, you know, about two people talking about life and what it means and so forth. And it's got some really good actors playing, you know, supporting characters. Mamie Gummer is in it. Mickey Sumner is Mamie. Okay, Mickey. Mamie
Gummer. Meryl Streep's daughter.
Meryl Streep's daughter is in it. Joan Cusack is in it. Mickey Sumner is in it. Anyway, I really enjoyed this movie. It was like catnip for me. It really was. I lapped it up.
Joe.
Yeah, one can't help but be impressed by the quality of the filmmaking. By the way that the script is written, by the performances, in particular Jason Segel here is doing something here that I did not expect of him at all. I mean, Yazdi, you just mentioned you like seeing actors, when we spoke about Jennifer Aniston and Cake, going out of their comfort zone, and clearly this is definitely a very different Jason Segel that we've ever seen. So again, I admired this movie for all of its technical prowess. I just was not at one with it. And so for me, that renders it as a 6 out of 10. But there's plenty to admire here.
Yeah, I would say really deep characters, which really comes across. That's the one thing that it does perfectly. Not much goes on, but what does is kind of feels a little cat and mouse really well. I would say, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, just like when we were talking about in our last episode about Straight Outta Compton, and we all said, I mean, I said that I wouldn't begrudge any of those three lead actors getting a Best Actor nomination. Similarly, I would not begrudge Jason Segel if he got a Best Actor nomination for this. I think it's too small a film, but maybe there's hope. He's quite something, especially playing somebody who was, you know, a real character.
Yeah, well, I'm drawing a blank. The comedy actor who was in Wolf of Wall Street and got the nomination.
Jonah Hill.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, if he can get nominated for his work in
twice.
Right, that's right. Yeah, twice.
Yeah, Moneyball
and in Wolf of Wall Street, then if the timing had been a little better, you have to consider Jason Segel's chances.
Yeah.
All right. Next movie of the week is American Ultra.
So American Ultra is directed by Nima Nourizadeh, whose only other previous directing credit is the movie Project X, which came out last year. Do you remember about the party gone wrong?
Yes.
Well, here he is again in a second movie called American Ultra, which I haven't seen the movie. I missed the screening. But it seems to me like a mash between an ultra-violent action movie, a horror film, and a romantic comedy, which seems to me an odd thing to mash up. Kind of reminds me of the movie Warm Bodies, but maybe you guys can tell me if it matches up to that. By the way, I love Warm Bodies, which I really liked. In terms of the plot, it loosely tells the story of a government spy who is disguised as a stoner. And wouldn't you know it, he becomes the target of the government, who orders him to be killed. The movie stars Jesse Eisenberg again, Kristen Stewart, Connie Britton, Topher Grace, Walton Goggins, John Leguizamo, and Bill Pullman. Quite the supporting cast. So, what do you guys think?
So, this plays more like a comic book than a movie, but I loved it in the moment. Having had a bit of time away from it now, it seems a little disposable looking back, but Connie Britton stole the show for me. Huh. However, Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart have great chemistry. You know, I really did enjoy this in the moment. Very entertaining.
Is it too much? Oh, well, we'll let Joe comment and then we can get to it.
So, this is a movie that's trying desperately to be a cult movie.
Mm. Yes.
From the get-go. It's you can almost see the director's mind saying, I want to make a cult movie and it's going to be called American Ultra and it's going to... And as a result, it tries a lot of different things and doesn't quite work. And so it leaves it with this tonal inconsistency that for me was a bit annoying because it starts off almost like an art house movie, right? And then it kind of flits back and forth between this kick-ass style action with blood and guts violence. And it's incredibly violent at times. And then, a Jason Bourne type thriller where you have this kind of government conspiracy and all of this would have been forgivable if we'd had some character or someone to root for, but I think they kind of left that on the cutting room floor here. It was, the whole thing was very tedious for me.
Did you have any fun with it?
It was okay. There were some laughs. I mean, I think that the violence was always unexpected, and I think it escalated as the movie went along. So, you did get this kind of sense of... there was some button pushing going along, but again, I couldn't escape the feeling that somebody was trying to do something cool here and didn't get away with it.
Yeah, it kind of felt a little bit Yazdi like a cooler American cultish version of Hot Fuzz. Yeah. That same sort of sensibility that we get from a Frost and Peg movie, but it didn't have as much humor. And of course, it's American. You know, those Frost and Peg, the Cornetto trio of movies right. are very British in their sensibility. For me, there are some great scenes here, mainly related to Jesse Eisenberg playing this surprised stoner that he's actually a trained assassin. But the hyper violence, I actually found really funny, like how I find it funny in a Tarantino. No, Kick-Ass is not, I can't remember now, but where they have those movies where heads are chopped off and then blood goes spurting everywhere.
Think
like a slasher.
Kill Bill.
Yeah.
The restaurant scene.
Correct. Oh. Correct. But it's not as smart as a Tarantino movie. And of course, I'm biased because I love Tarantino. But, I thought the violence, which is really weird for me to say, was really funny. I found it really comical. But again, the thing that kept playing for me, and I think, Joe, you summed this up, it's so precious in its desire to be a cult movie that it just came across like a comic book.
And I'm just looking at Rotten Tomatoes
here. Or a graphic novel.
And somebody said the exact same thing. Scott Renshaw, Salt Lake City Weekly. But there's something about trying to be a cult favorite that cripples the actual filmmaking. And that's exactly my point. I mean, they desperately want this to be kind of understated cool, but it's,
So
it's
that
fun,
mashup
though.
Doesn't work. So is the
it's
violence
fun. I think it was fun. Yeah.
Okay.
It is. I mean, it really is, I mean, but it's fun. I found it really, really fun for me. Connie Britton, I was so impressed
what
with
does
her.
She play? Is,
she
what,
plays this.
Somebody's dub.
No, she plays an agent.
Oh, okay.
And, she's caught in a difficult situation. And I think Topher Grace did a good job. He was very typecast. Also an agent, but I found it fun. I found it fun.
What about Kristen Stewart?
She wasn't hateable in this.
Oh, she's never hateable.
I didn't want to slap her.
No,
she was
doing the Kristen Stewart thing.
Yeah, she was doing
the thing.
Yeah,
you know that that's... The movie opens with a very... Like, the first few minutes are, you know... I really thought this was going to be something, you know, that you might see in smaller independent cinema, right?
Mm.
Had a very subdued kind of tone. It was taking its time to...
Yeah.
To kind of ease us into the movie, but then you have this preposterous twist, and that's what I think is wrong, right? When you have a Jason Bourne type scenario where, you know, an agent is an agent who needs to be activated, and then he's activated, and then you change the movie altogether, right? If you want it to be kind of a comedy spy thriller, but you introduce it as
but I think maybe that's a slice of Americana. They want to kind of almost mislead you and surprise you. You don't think it's intentional, or it's...
No, I think it's totally intentional, but it the intent to surprise and mislead comes off as false.
Oh, okay.
In the same as like Mia Earl and the Dying Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's trying so hard, to give you something. They've mapped out the way they want you to feel, and they're like, right, at this moment you will feel this.
So it feels
at this moment
you
will feel shock. At this moment you will laugh. And so, yeah, it did feel very deliberate.
Yeah, anything else?
So it's no Warm Bodies.
No, it's not as sweet or as endearing or heartfelt as Warm Bodies. But I think for me, it wasn't annoying.
Okay.
For me, it was very entertaining. But I'll sum up. I mean, it's so entertaining in the moment. I had such a huge smile on my face. But literally, that feeling disappears as soon as the credits run. And there's nothing left to hang on to.
So your score?
I would say somewhere between a 6 and a 7. I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, this movie was not hateable in the moment. It was just... I didn't... So you said this a podcast or two ago. Why did this story need to be told?
Right.
And that's kind of the way I felt all the way through this movie. You know, I almost wanted the Jesse Eisenberg character to be dispatched by his foes so that I could get on with my life and leave the theater. And that makes it sound way more hateable than it actually was.
It does.
But that's mean.
But I just
killed Jesse Eisenberg.
But that's the thing. I didn't care for him. I didn't really worry. You know, whether or not he escaped the situation wasn't meaningful to me. So, 5 out of 10.
Okay. 5 and a 7.
Yeah. What do you think, Yazdi? Is it one that we've inspired you to watch, maybe?
No, not at all.
It's not done terribly well. It's running 47%, so, you know, half people seem to like it, others not so much.
Yes, one of the San Diego critics said that it was the best movie they'd seen since True Romance, you know, like a violent action romantic movie. But then a lot of people loved Me and Earl and the Dying Girl as well, so...
I actually liked it.
This one, not Me and Earl.
Okay. No. You know my opinion on Me and Earl, but I like this one.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers, instagram.com/movierollers, movierollers everywhere. And I'm signing us up for a new service. So if you listen to TuneIn Radio, we will shortly be on TuneIn Radio, which means if you have an Amazon Echo, you will be able to listen to us just by saying, Alexa.
What?
Listen to Movie Wallace.
Oh, yes, he hasn't met Alexa yet.
Okay, we'll talk about Alexa on a future podcast.
Okay.
I have a new friend. Her name is Alexa.
Do you know about this, Rashmi?
I do.
She is very svelte, and she listens and does exactly what I say.
Oh, dear.
How boring.
I know.
That's all I have to say.
Okay.
All right. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.